Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we've been talking about proteas. And John, you are teaching a class today at 9:30 here in Poway on proteas. And so if you want to learn more than what we're going to be talking about here, you are welcome to come into the class. They're always a popular class, and you will find out much, much more about these interesting varieties of plants. You know, it's funny, way back, the only grevillea that we ever used to get was Grevillea robusta. Mm-hmm. That was it, which is actually the source of lacewood, the hardwood, which is a really, really pretty, really pretty exotic hardwood. Mm-hmm. And the trees grow like crazy.
Oh, they're huge.
They get enormous. But the problem with them is the flowers have so much nectar in them, mm-hmm. and they're so sticky that if you park a car underneath of one of them, it'll just be plastered with the flowers, and they'll stick to the paint. They also shed a lot. Mm-hmm. It's an evergreen tree, but they drop a lot of foliage. Oh, it's
very messy.
Yeah. And it's also, just for everyone who doesn't know what a Grevillea robusta is, it has a bunch of common names, right? Silver oak, silver yoke, Australian silk oak.
Silk oak, yeah. But you were going to talk about feeding proteas, because that's one of the, they can be temperamental as far as
they can
their
be
feeding
very
is concerned.
Temperamental. And here's the thing, you know, I hear people all the time say, don't feed California natives, don't feed proteaceae. I guarantee you the growers do.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. You know, I mean, so what somebody's makes you do think it. Somebody's feeding these things? Now, granted, they want them to grow very fast so that they're market ready. But if you never feed them, you're not going to be really successful, in my opinion. And by the way, there are some varieties, and I'll tell you varieties that are going to do better for you than others for the class. But my favorite of among the leucospermums is High Gold.
Oh, yeah.
I planted one in my parents' front yard in Claremont. And it's not getting watered. It gets nothing. It gets no water. It gets no food. It gets no care. There must be, it's now spread to maybe 5 feet across all directions and about 4 feet high. And I'm not exaggerating. It probably had 1,500 flowers on it last time I saw it. Just absolutely stunning. So it thrives on neglect, but you can do things. So we've talked about in the previous segment, do the iron sulfate trick, where you're going to put the iron sulfate into solution, do it as a drench on your proteaceae, because you're taking care of pH plus helping with the iron. Sometimes if they're really chlorotic and having problems, I'll mix up a little fish emulsion, a 501 or a 511, along with liquid chelated iron. And one of my favorite tools, everybody should own one of these, and that is the Siphonject, which they sell here at the store. Yeah. Mix it up in a 5-gallon bucket, a cup of fish emulsion fertilizer, a cup of liquid chelated iron and zinc, put it in solution, and then drench all of your proteaceae with that. It'll increase your rate of survival and of being very healthy substantially. And so there are things you can do, but here's the best part. When I do this class at Walter Anderson, the best stuff you are going to see for the whole year is going to be available. So you're going to see protea, leucodendrons, leucospermums, grevilleas that you're just not going to see on a regular. And Banksias. Yep. Oh, gosh. Banksias are my number one favorite. Banksias are just flat out amazing.
In fact, Brian and I spoke yesterday in preparation for your class, because it's coming up, to make sure we have a bunch of 1 gallons. The last time we had the class, we had, I don't know, 100 or so 1 gallon, every variety of protea, leucodendron, leucospermum. And they were selling on Friday when we set up for the class, they were going out the door.
People were coming in and buying before them Saturday. Before the class.
Yes. Yeah. So it's probably your best chance of the entire year to get some really sweet plants. So you need to be here today.
And I don't want to take away from your class, but what's your position on cottonseed meal and alfalfa meal? Because we have a lot of folks that always say that's the go-to for proteaceae.
I agree with them. I mean, so you do not want phosphorus. So there are a couple issues. In Australia and in South Africa, there are basically no sources of phosphorus for these plants. So what they've done, they've evolved to the point that they can take whatever phosphorus is available and they can multiply it within their own system. And so if you give them a little phosphorus, they multiply that times 100, and then they literally poison themselves to death with phosphorus. And so you cannot put any phosphorus on, or you know, the NPK, maybe 1 or 2% tops.
Yeah.
And if you do give them phosphorus, the thing about phosphorus is it also persists a very long time in the soil. And so if you do that, you're just going to have very, very poor luck. And even soils that have had previous applications of phosphorus can be problematic.
I know someone who tried to grow, they were going to put proteas in, and they were going to do a cut flower farm, but it was an old avocado grove orchard.
Yeah.
And they were very unsuccessful until they did a bunch more tests, and they found out that their phosphorus levels were incredibly high because they've been throwing, you know, triple 16 or something for decades.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But that's such a great plant family. And so, and numbers of them can be terrific for cut flowers, but there are also some that are just so terrific in a landscape. For instance, Grevillea Mount Tamberitha.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a gorgeous little plant that is. And I think too, don't underestimate the fact that these plants are so compatible and so beautiful when added to California natives. I know some people are such purists about, it's almost like, you know what they say, a convert is more Catholic than the Pope. Sometimes, sometimes people that are into natives, it's like they are such purists. I can't have anything but a California native. And right. then I'll say, define native for me. Is a native from Big Sur? How about Mendocino? Or is it only San Diego County natives? Because that's a big question right there.
Absolutely.
But you can still do substantially native landscape and add some leucodendrons or leucospermums for some pop or some banksias. And they're totally compatible in terms of what their plant needs are.
Mm-hmm.
I want to add one to that. Chamelusium, the wax flower.
Oh,
I think
goodness,
we spoke of it before, but we put one in, I guess, 2 years ago from a 1 gallon because, John, you and I are big advocates. The smaller, the better. That's why Capri married me. But I put this 1 gallon in, and it is probably 5 feet, almost 6 feet tall, a good 4 or 5 feet wide, and just covered in flowers and bees.
Mm-hmm.
No water. There's no irrigation on it anywhere.
And that's a great plant for fill.
Oh, for cut flowers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really a great, great plant.
And it's in the very, you know, that kind of dry Australian kind of.
In fact, Joe and Julie Walker, good friends of mine that own Obra Verde growers up in Valley Center. You know, Joe was really instrumental in bringing Camelosium to the United States. And one of his hybrids, it's My Sweet 16.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Familiar with it.
Yeah. It changes color 3 times during its cycle. So it starts out sort of white, then it goes to white and pink, then it goes to white, pink, red, and then to orange at the end. So this one plant over a period of time will be several different shades of color, which is really fascinating for a Camelosium.
I want to put more in.
That's another one. When we've carried it for many, many years, but at one time there was only one variety of Camelosium that we could get, and now there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like the grevilleas, there's mm-hmm. ground cover grevilleas, there's bush type grevilleas, there's all kinds of them.
I just realized I've been pronouncing it wrong, or you two have, for the last 30 years. I thought it was Chamelusium.
Well, so you'll see, actually, Michael Buckner, if you know who Michael mm-hmm. Buckner is, great plantsman, wonderful designer, landscaper. And he's probably the best I've ever seen for plant pronunciation of binomials. He's great. And so it often depends on whether it was Greek or Latin.
Oh, yeah.
And so in Greek, when you see CH, it's always going to be a hard K sound. And it's actually the letter K in Greek. But a lot of these things are being imported from the Greek language. And so then it's a hard C. So
yes. I'll look it up later.
Calabracoa rather than Calabracoa.
Right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. The Dave's Garden Botanary. It's mm-hmm. a cross between, you know, botany and dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
You put the word in and they give you the correct pronunciation for botanicals, for the binomials, as well as where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use that a lot, and I'm going to have to check that one out.
And the Missouri Botanic Garden has
a
very encyclopedic list of plants with also pronunciation,
which is one of the best botanic gardens on the globe. Oh my God. I love
the Missouri
place.
One?
Oh yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's either the oldest or the second oldest, and it's the largest or second largest. It's been around forever, and it's gorgeous.
may have to go back and take a look at that. The one that I'm anxious to go see, and especially now that my son lives there, is the Brooklyn Botanical Garden.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the opposite. That's the oldest and Missouri's mm-hmm. second, or Brooklyn vice versa with size, because that has the big park there.
Well, so. And U.S. Botanic Garden is literally the oldest. It was started by the founding fathers. So George Washington actually.
That little, yes.
Yeah. 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 But it's rather small, actually. Yeah.
Interesting. We talking about Banksias. I actually killed a couple trying to get them to grow. I couldn't get it right. I don't know what I did wrong, but that was one that I struggled with. Mm. But the pincushions are just they're almost foolproof.
Well, mm-hmm. you live close to the Poway store. I would encourage you at 9:30 to show up and see this class.
Come to the class.
And we can reserve a seat for you right up front, so you don't have to worry about standing in the back, because John's classes often have standing in the back.
Yeah.
Hey, and speaking of classes, one of our dear friends, one of my sweetest friends, is going to be having a class next week. Or not next week. I mean, she's going to be on the show next
on
week.
The show.
She's going to be on the show. That's right. A great segue. You know,
next week.
Yep.
Yeah. Brigitte from San Diego Seed Company is going to be joining us. And
she's going to teach a class for us later in February as well.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah. She has taught a class before on saving seed, I believe, wasn't
it? She has taught a class usually every year, sometimes twice a year, on mm-hmm. seed sowing and way, you know, getting your seeds started, what to do each season, feeding pests, things like that. Adams has done our seed savings classes.
Okay.
Yep. Well, and, you know, I sort of get a swelled head when I think of the classes I do, and I go, oh, my goodness, my class is standing room only. Oh, ho, ho. And then I come for Brigitte's class, and Brigitte has people parking on the street in front of the nursery. Every single parking place will be full, and Brigitte has them literally hanging from the rafters. She, and you know who she reminds me of? I love Brigitte. She reminds me of Lucy. From I Love
funny,
Lucy.
Yes.
And she's just hysterical. She's got the most bubbly, vivacious personality. And does she know her stuff?
She does. And she used to work at the Poway store.
Yeah,
she did. She worked here with us for a while before she really ventured out in her seed company and is doing well. And we're very happy for her.
Yeah. They keep adding new seeds to their line all the time. And they're all locally grown.
Locally grown, locally sourced. We know that they will grow in their environment.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she's going to be here behind the microphone next week's show.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that.
And we're looking forward to your class today at 9:30 at the Poway store on Proteaceae. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we'll be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticultural news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew, or want to learn more about the show, or how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. Or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at the same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.
Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we've been talking about fragrant plants. And one of the things, and you were talking, George, you were talking about trade-offs. There are no solutions, only trade-offs. And that's one thing that happened in the rose industry, where hybridizers basically hybridized the fragrance out of roses in exchange for better color, better form, nicer flowers, hardier plants. And it's been within about the past, 15 years or so, where they've started to swing the pendulum the other direction. And they're starting to bring out more varieties that do have some fragrance to them. I think my favorite rose that has a fragrance to it is probably Fragrant Cloud. It is an incredibly fragrant rose. It's a pretty color. It's mm-hmm. a kind of a coral red. Very easy to grow, not a picky rose. Mm-hmm. It's an easy one to grow. Chrysler Imperial is also incredibly fragrant.
As Mr. Lincoln. Mr. Lincoln. They're very similar.
Mr. Lincoln is another one.
Double Delight is my favorite.
Now, every time we do this, I say Double Delight's one of my favorites. Capri loves it.
Yeah.
There's one of us in this room that doesn't, he will
it's
always.
Not my favorite.
Really? Yes.
No, not my favorite. I've never been able to figure out what the fascination is with it. I just don't like it. And my dad was telling me one time, he and my mom were up and they were up in Portland and they went to the Rose Garden in Portland. And he said, you wouldn't believe the Double Delights in Portland. And it's one of those roses that is very affected by the climate that it grows in. And he said Double Delight in Portland doesn't look anything like it does down here. Hmm. He said it is a magnificent plant in Portland. But down here, it's probably at one time, and it may still be, I'd have to look at the sales figures and see, but we used to sell more Double Delights than we did any other rose. Hmm. It was that popular.
It's a pretty rose.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
Yeah.
you and I were chatting just before we came on, right? In matters of taste, there can be no dispute.
That's true.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. Another incredibly fragrant shrub, almost to the point of being overpowering, is night blooming jasmine, cestrum.
Right. And that's when you're saying your dad ripped out.
Yeah. We had one when I lived in Bay Park. We had one behind our house. And one summer, we didn't have air conditioning, so we'd have all the windows open in the house. And one summer, it was blooming. It was just going crazy. And the fragrance was overpowering. And my dad got up in the middle of the night and went in the backyard and yanked the thing out of the ground and threw it in the alley behind the house.
To
get rid of it. But there again, that's another one of those plants that you want to use it as a background plant. You don't want to put it up. It's not a pretty plant. Mm-hmm. There's bugs that will chew on them, and it's just kind of stringy and just not a good looking plant.
Yeah. It's always pale yellow.
Yeah.
It is an ugly plant.
Yeah. But the fragrance is incredible. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely incredible.
So some years ago I saw a list, and it might've been with John Bagnasco.
Oh, okay.
And it was about the top 10 fragrant roses and a little bit of information regarding each. And one of them was Angel Face.
Oh, yeah.
Which we put in because it is very fragrant. So that's another nice fragrant rose that we sell here and that we have in our garden.
Yeah. Most of the David Austin roses are incredibly fragrant. But I'm not a huge David Austin rose fan. They're kind of gangly and just not a great looking plant. The flowers are interesting because they have that kind of cabbage.
Well, they're very peony-esque, for lack of a better
they're
word.
They're old roses.
Right.
That are kind of bred with some modern traits, but there's nothing quite like the smell of these old cabbage roses. And, and there's damask and there's musk and
there's so
many really interesting fragrances. And the thing with David Austin's people air with is, and I've done some big David Austin rose installations around the country. And I did one that was an acre in Pensacola, Florida.
Oh, wow.
Of David Austin's. And so the client, they really, what they wanted, they knew how to use Austin's correctly. And the way you use Austin's correctly, they are not standalone rose garden roses.
No, they're not.
They have to have punch where you have, I would never group less than three together. Mm-hmm. So we would do groups of three, five, seven, and they literally look best when they're almost like hedgerows and drifts, and then you do the heights, but you have to know how to group them. But when they're grouped appropriately, they're stunning.
The best looking David Austins that I had ever seen were at the Barona Rose Garden.
Exactly.
How they planted them. Mm-hmm. They usually triples. They planted three at a time. And those were by far the best looking David Austins I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I haven't been out there recently, so I don't know how they look now.
Yeah, I think it's been a year and a half since we were last there.
Yeah. I was there last year. It was still very nice.
Right.
And Tess, the Arbivilles, I think, is the one. One of the things I like about Austin's, too, is that the colors can be very, very intense. with almost this iridescence to them that you don't see in the other rose breeding. And so I'm a big fan of Austin's.
Yeah, Capri loves them. And so we have, I don't know, four or five on the property. And I have grown to like them a lot for the fragrance. Mm-hmm. But also they make a great cut flower because of that cabbage. I call them a peony type head. When you put a bunch of them together, they look really nice. And that fragrance just comes out of them in the house.
Yeah, that's a really, really nice one. But you're right. You have to plant them in groups. It's not a good standalone.
Yeah.
As far as roses are concerned.
Well, speaking of cut flowers, can I grab us and segue to another subject?
I'm looking forward to it, yes.
Okay, by far, my favorite, absolute favorite flowers for cutting and for arrangements are not really flowers at all, and they are Proteaceae. So many of them, well, some are flowers, some are not. They're cone bushes, but we're going to have a class today. I think this is my favorite class.
9:30
today at the Poway store. We are going to have John Clement's infamous or famous class on Proteaceae. And that's always really well attended. And I think it's my favorite group of plants on the planet. I just think of true Protea, Banksias, Grevilleas, Leucodendrons, Leucospermums, and what a group.
You left out my favorite.
Oh, did I miss one?
Macadamia nut.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And macadamia nuts, which actually have very fragrant flowers.
Yeah, too. They do.
Very much so.
People forget how nicely fragrant those are. And the thing I like about them is that, and I've done this, I will take a challenge and somebody will say, okay, can you make an arrangement? I'll do it in 5 minutes with the Proteaceae. Mm-hmm. And if you have any decent growing ones at all. And there was a plant I actually drove by. I was doing some work over toward Grantville. I planted one back in 2011. So this is a while. Wilson's Wonder. Now, you know, when you think of Proteaceae, most of the sizes that are posted on the labels are totally errant. They are not correct at all. So this Wilson's Wonder was taller than the house.
Oh, my word.
It was huge. It was more a tree than it was even, and it hadn't been pruned in a long time.
Is that a Protea or is that
a Leucodendron?
Leucodendron.
Okay. Leucodendron Wilson's Wonder. And if you read the tag, it'll say, I think, 4 feet high by, don't believe it. If you leave them to their own devices, it was basically a small tree. But
well, this is a problem because our Proteaceae, a little garden with some Grevilleas and Proteas, Leucodendrons, Leucospermum, are closer than what you just said because of the tags. You know, this is a dwarf compact variety. And so we'll see.
So here's the pruning thing too. You can prune them for arrangements.
Right.
So that's how people like Mel Resendez at Resendez Brothers, they're constantly cutting them. And the thing is, I like about them is that, you know, all the Protea are named after the Greek god Proteus. And he was a shapeshifter and he was constantly changing. You never knew exactly how he'd show up. Well, that's how Protea are. My favorite of all time of Leucodendrons was one called Yaelii. And I have not been able to find one. I had one I planted at my parents', but that thing would totally change color 4 times a year. In winter, it would be almost pure white with little pink tips. It would then go deep red. It would be red orange. It's marvelous. And so the thing I like about them is that you have one plant in your landscape that can look different 4 times a year or 3 times a year.
Well, the entire genus looks different. So if I take out and show you a Grevillea and then I show you a macadamia nut, you wouldn't believe they're in the same.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Quite different. Now, our friend Nan Sturman calls them, you have used this many times in the classes. This is the fourth year, I believe, you'll be teaching Proteas here at Poway.
Yeah.
But you always start the class with saying, Nan says these are 50% plants. Why do you say that?
50-50s. Well, certainly Leucospermums I would describe as 50-50. Leucodendrons, I'd say you get a 90% success rate, but certainly Leucospermums, you'll kill half of what you put in typically.
How about the regular Proteas, like a King Protea?
I'd give those a 50-50 shot too. They're a little tougher.
Yeah, kings are not.
They're not easy.
Not easy to grow. That is my favorite out of all of them.
Yeah, they're
because
cool.
The flowers are so
enormous.
They're huge. Yep. Just a beautiful plant. But the pincushions are super easy to grow. I put one in our backyard, and I mean, it just thrives on neglect. It grows like crazy, I was always told you don't feed them, especially anything with phosphorus in it. Right. Phosphorus is not good as far as proteas are concerned. I don't do anything to that plant, and it's perfectly happy out by the swimming pool. And it's, and we get dozens and dozens of flowers off of it every year. It's a, and right next to it, they're both in, big containers that I, ceramic containers that I cut the bottoms out of and just set them on the ground. And in the container that's right next to it is a king protea, which doesn't do much. I mean, it's still alive, amazingly enough. But it certainly isn't nearly as profuse and hardy as the pincushion.
Well, we'll have to talk about feeding them perhaps, you know, in a little bit, because I know that I've attended several of the classes and you do have a little bit of a feeding regime of sort to do, not just in a, in an MPK, but some of the irons and such. So
yes,
I think there's a lot you can do to maybe promote growth and flowers on your king protea.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. As a matter of fact, we're gonna take a quick break here. But we'll talk about feeding proteas when we come back. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We will be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. If you'd like to, if you have a question or have a suggestion, want to get in touch with us, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. We would be more than happy to answer your question on the air or take your suggestion. If there's somebody that you would like us to interview or find out more about, we would be happy to do that. So email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. And remember, Anderson is spelled S-E-N. We were talking about fragrant plants. We were talking about Brunsfelsia when we left the last segment. Brunsfelsia macrantha is the large flowering variety that you just don't see that often anymore, unfortunately.
Not at all anymore.
Yeah, that was a tough one. But we were talking about fragrant plants too. And some of the more, the Clayara was obviously one of them that we were talking about. I think one of the ones that I absolutely love, but I've never been able to grow it in my horrible soil in Scripps Ranch, is Michelia.
Oh,
Michelia champaca.
Yeah. We have one up at the house that's actually starting to bloom again.
Nice.
Which seemed, it didn't really lose its leaves. It's ready to start blooming.
I have a client in Pacific Beach at the base of Mount Soledad that has some huge ones. They're maybe 15 feet high, gorgeous plants loaded with flowers. And that's also the source of ylang ylang, if I'm saying right, ylang ylang.
Oh, yeah.
It's really a fragrant plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much so.
It's a beautiful tree. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a yellowish colored one. And then
is that the Himalayan?
That's the Himalayan.
Yeah. Himalayan ones are yellow,
then
right?
Then there's a white one, the Michelia champaca alba. And I remember the first time that I heard that they were available was from another group, another outstanding nursery who used to sell a lot of wholesale that just doesn't do much wholesale anymore, was San Gabriel Nursery
in
the San Gabriel Valley up in LA. And they had one for sale. It was in a 24-inch box. And this is probably 30 years ago or more. That I remember hearing about it, and I was talking to our sales rep about it, and they had one, and it was in a 24-inch box, and it was $2,000, and you had to go get it. They would not put it on their truck and bring it down. So consequently, we never bought it.
Right.
It would have been a difficult one to sell. But then when Barovia got a hold of it, and they started growing them, and they're one of the better growers of it. They do a really, really good job with it.
Monrovia are very good growers. In fact, I saw 3 5-gallons at the Point Loma store that were really quite nice, maybe 6 feet high, a couple of feet across, set you back about 190, if I recall. But what a gorgeous plant.
Yeah.
And it's also the source of champaca incense. If you like that kind of interesting aroma, which I do.
And the leaves are nice too. I mean, it's a very, it's a pretty plant.
Right. And it's evergreen. Actually related to magnolias.
It is. But you know, last year mine went deciduous. That's why I was keen to point out that it didn't lose its leaves this year. Last year it went deciduous where I had it in some shade and cooler areas. It lost its leaves, but came right back as soon as it warmed up. Our good friend, Mary, you know, Mary, she had a big one in her backyard that was shaded. So it spent most of its life going up, and it was the most narrow, it was like a Italian cypress narrow, but it was a champaca and it was gorgeous and so fragrant. And then she had one on her patio in a large pot, and she gifted it to us. And that's the one that we have at our place. And it's a wonderful plant.
Yeah. And their growth habit is more narrow.
Yeah, but not this particular, because we've seen a lot of them. This one was like almost like a stick, but so tall and fragrant regardless once it was out of the shade.
Another really fragrant plant. I did a consult, little drab consult, and lady wanted to have something in a big pot that she could use for some screening, but it had to have fragrance too. So a couple of things came to mind. One, have you ever grown Aloysia virgata? It's a sweet almond bush.
We have it in our, you walked around our property and you saw it and you went, is this an Aloysia?
It's such a fragrant plant. Yeah. It is one of, I think, maybe my single favorite of, at least for the scent, of any of the scented plants.
It's not, I don't think it's a gorgeous plant.
It's not.
And it can be a little leggy, but my goodness, when that thing blooms, the entire yard for, you know, hundreds of feet is going to have that scent.
I am not familiar with that one.
I submit to you, you just don't remember, because we've had them right here.
You've sold them before. I've seen them. They're really hard to get. But the first time I encountered them was about 40 years ago, and I was at the Huntington near the Rose Garden.
That's when you were about 12.
Right? I was like, 8 years old, I think. And there was just this extremely fragrant, very sweet. It was just intoxicating, I would describe it. And you know, we're of an age, guys, but remember Warner Brothers cartoons, that there would be some really good scent and Bugs Bunny would be picked up by the nostrils and they just carry him along?
Yes.
That's what that did to me. It literally picked me up by the nostrils and just said, come find me. And I literally walked around until I found the source, and it was maybe 200 feet away, and that scent wafted that far. And
wow,
it's outrageously scented.
I'm gonna have to.
We should order some.
I'm gonna have to look more, into that one.
As soon as mine blooms, I'll have you come up for a glass of wine, and you can smell.
You know, and another one that was another fragrant shrub that was really nice, and a really pretty shrub was Maria.
Oh,
Maria,
yes.
Exotica.
Right. Related to citrus,
which is why you can't get it anymore.
Because the quarantine, it falls under the quarantine. Nobody. It's unfortunate. It's a really nice plant, but it's not that big of a money maker to make it worth all the hoops that you have to go through to grow it under
and
the quarantine.
And slow growing too.
Yeah. But a really pretty plant. It's also the one of the Marias. I think it's paniculata is curry leaf.
Yes.
The source of curry.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So that's another neat fragrant one. Another one that's really, really fragrant. Osmanthus.
Oh yes, osmanthus fragrance. Difficult to grow for me.
It's a terrible plant.
And I was going to say,
terrible plant. Never looks good.
That's where I was going with it. Yeah. It's very fragrant, but it never looks good. And I think, Ken, every time we do bring this plant up, you go back to the one by the county admin building.
Oh yeah, they surrounded it, and it's
fragrant, but it is ugly.
It's a terrible looking plant. Right. Yeah, when people wanted to plant that in their yard, I would tell them, well, if you're going to do that, plant this towards the back and then put something that looks good in front of it, because you're going to smell it no matter what.
Right.
But you don't want to look at it, because it's
always has brown leaves.
It's always got salt burn.
Salt burn. It's terrible for salt burn. Yeah.
But so, if you can hide it.
True.
And get that scent, it is incredible. And they make a sauce in Asia, an osmanthus sauce, like a jelly. Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
So a little trick I learned from Angus Stewart, who's a presenter on Australian broadcasting, incredible plantsman. He's really good. And even in Australia, believe it or not, they have issues with some salt on certain areas. And so he takes iron sulfate and puts about a tablespoon per gallon of water. So in a 5-gallon bucket, maybe 5 tablespoons, agitate it thoroughly till it's completely in solution, and then pour that on your plants that suffer with either chlorosis or salt burn, because the sulfur and the iron sulfate will deal with the pH and bring that pH down. Okay. But then it also causes that iron that's now in solution to be uptaken very, very quickly by the plant. And it's like a tonic to plants. That's not a secret I share very often, except for at Walter Anderson classes.
I was going to say, you talk about that with proteaceas and then citrus as well.
Exactly, yes. Right. But it is a real game changer for those kind of plants that really struggle with our terrible salty water.
That's interesting. It makes perfect sense to me, but I had not heard of that.
Do you put it as you rain it all over the leaves?
I do. So once I've got it in solution in a 5-gallon bucket, I put it in a watering can with a nice kind of a rain nozzle, and then just literally drizzle it onto the foliage and then soak the ground around it. And it really does a great job.
I'll have to remember that.
You should.
I should. Yeah, that's a
You should listen to the radio show.
You learn so much on this radio show. Another absolutely wonderful plant is sambac, which is Jasminum picake. Is that right? Picake is the Hawaiian word for it.
It is sambac.
Jasminum sambac.
Right. It's the Arabian the Arabian jasmine.
They call it Arabian jasmine. But it's another one that's nice.
And Monrovia makes one called Summer Soul, which is one of those.
Yeah, beautiful fragrance. But there again, just a
bugger to grow.
Not a good looking plant. It's just not. And some people really like the Grand Duke variety,
right?
Which just looks like a big.
It looks like a carnation a little bit too.
Just kind of a mutated golf ball. I mean,
Don't hold back, Ken. Tell us how you really feel.
I don't think it's that great a looking of a flower,
but it's fragrant.
They're very fragrant. Yeah. But I think just the double sambac jasmine is actually a very pretty flower.
How about Brugmansia?
Oh, of course.
Right? The angel's trumpet.
Angel's trumpet.
Yep. Intoxicating.
Especially towards evening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. That's a really nice one. That's one of my favorites. Yeah,
I've collected for years also for fragrant plants. The short carnations, the little Walter Anderson's has been the best source for me for these, but I would have probably 15-20 varieties, and in Britain they call those pinks or cottage pinks, but the small ones that are maybe under a foot high, but they are so intensely fragrant. And if it looks great but it has no fragrance, it does not come home. But if I smell them, oh my goodness, they'll waft 6-10 feet away and give you a lot of really nice fragrance. And freesias too.
Freesias as well. Ours are starting to come up right now. They're probably about 6-8 inches tall, just waiting for those flowers.
You know, carnations is another one of those plants that has fallen out of favor over the years. And every once in a while, we used to get cutting carnations in different varieties of them. We'd get them in rose pots, then the 2 1/4 inch square rose pots. But you just can't find them anymore. But they were the cutting carnations were the long stemmed ones, and they were very popular. But they just have fallen out of favor. Another shrub that is absolutely incredibly fragrant at night is night blooming jasmine.
I was going to say before we take a break, I'd like to talk about night blooming jasmine.
Yeah, that's a
Jasminum nocturnum.
Yeah.
Or is
no,
it?
No,
it's jasminum.
It's not.
It's not a true jasmine. No. What is that one? Sestrum.
Sestrum.
Sestrum. Sestrum nocturnum. Is it Sestrum nocturnum?
Or Sestrum nocturnum.
Is there Sestrum parquet too?
Right.
Right.
So
night blooming jasmine's a one. It is susceptible to a lot of pests, though.
Oh, it's another ugly one.
But it is exactly. Well, as we've said before, my favorite economist, Dr. Thomas Sowell, says there are no solutions, only trade-offs. So if you want a really nice looking plant, you may not have the fragrance, or you may not have whatever, but there are a lot of plants that meet all the criteria.
You know what, that's an interesting point that you bring up with the trade-offs, and we can talk about that more when we come back. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way.
We'll be right back.
If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. And we're going to be with you for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Good, good.
Doing well. You know, I saw a post on Facebook that came up and after the fires up in Altadena, and I hadn't even really thought about it. Somebody was asking about Nuccio's Nursery, which was a very famous azalea and camellia grower. They've been in business since 1935. Unfortunately, it sounds like some of the nursery may have been damaged in the fire, but it sounds like they are going to close down. And they had been planning on closing anyway. The two brothers that were running it, Jim and Tom, after 90 years, they were done. And they didn't have anybody in there, only one of them had kids, and they didn't want to get involved in the nursery, unfortunately. So that's going to be a huge loss. There was a big article in the LA Times that I found, and I think it was in July of 2023 when they announced that they were going to be closing down. They were going to sell the property to an adjacent school for expansion of the school. But unbelievably good nursery, and they grew some absolutely incredible camellias and hybridized them too. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's not a lot of that going on anymore.
No.
Unfortunately, I think some of the most beautiful camellias that I think I've ever seen were actually products of Nuccio's Gem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was one.
Nuccio's Pearl.
Pearl.
Yeah.
There were a number of them. Yeah. And we used to go up every once in a while and buy plants from them as well and mm-hmm. bring them down, because they had just unbelievable selection of stuff.
Incredible.
Absolutely.
Well, and some incredible. Of the really hard to get things like Camellia reticulata and mm-hmm. The Higo camellias, the camellias of the samurai, some of those were my favorite plants in my garden.
Well, there was a yellow one.
Yes.
It had a completely different leaf structure to it than mm-hmm. most camellias. It was a long, narrow leaf one. And I think it was from them that we got the first Camellia sinensis, the tea camellias.
The tea camellias, yeah. Right.
And then there was one that was, I think the yellow one was actually a fragrant one too.
Mm-hmm. It was fragrant. Yeah.
But just some beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, but I don't know who's going to take over. The other problem too is with camellias, it's not a fast turning, mm-hmm. not
no.
a fast turning crop.
No.
So it takes years to bring everything on. So, and it's hard to make a lot of money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably the best grower, or arguably the best camellia grower that's left now, is probably Monrovia.
Mm-hmm.
And we get
a lot of selection from them.
They grow outstanding camellias, but mm-hmm. unfortunately, they've also gotten outstandingly expensive.
They are very expensive.
Yeah.
So those are all cuttings, right? That they make mm-hmm. make them that way. I have a couple that we've started from seed mm-hmm. that I just picked up off the ground, and they're mm. gorgeous.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one's like an apple blossom the mm-hmm. traditional apple blossom one
mm-hmm.
has a little scent to it, white flower, but it was from a seed.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if it's hybridized enough. It's probably the exact replica of the parent, but.
Mm. Well, it's funny you mentioned the Camellia reticulata. You really don't see those.
Not anymore.
At all anymore. And the one that I remember, the one variety that I remember the most was Crimson Robe,
mm-hmm.
which was, it was a huge flower.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely, absolutely beautiful flower. The plants don't look like much. They're kind of leggy and just not a, it's not a really pretty plant like a Japonica camellia, mm-hmm. but the reticulatas were always really interesting. that they would grow. So
yeah, one of my favorites was Confucius, which was huge pink, about the size of a big softball, and then that very open stamen. You know, it really a pretty plant, and very statuesque. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, that was a really neat one too. And then you mentioned a plant that you saw down at our San Diego store the last time you were down there, and it was Clayera japonica.
Yes,
and that is an outstanding plant. That we used to carry that all the time, but hardly anybody grows it.
What is that plant? It's in the camellia family.
It's very small, white flowers, but very fragrant.
Incredibly fragrant.
Very fragrant.
Yeah.
And in fact, I have an account that we do in La Jolla that the owner just wants as many fragrant plants as they can get.
I can understand that. Yes.
Yeah. And so that's one already on my list. So now people do not run out and buy those
until
I get down there to buy them all out. But that's a gorgeous plant. And it's very common. It's from Japan. It was very common in many of the Japanese gardens over there. Mm-hmm.
You think the japonica had anything to do with that?
Probably. Yeah, you know.
I actually have one in my backyard right outside our back door, and it's probably about 5 feet tall and maybe 3.5-4 feet in diameter. It's just absolutely solid plant. Mm-hmm. But it's in constant shade. It doesn't get any direct sunlight. Mm-hmm. Doesn't bloom.
Right.
It grows perfectly well,
yeah,
but it will not flower. I've had it there for at least 20 years, and it has not flowered once since it's been there. So they need a little more sun.
They need a little more sun. In fact, I was selling a bunch of plants to people. I don't work at the Point Loma store, but I was down there selling a bunch of plants because a nice couple came in and they were asking questions. So I felt let's sell you some plants. And that was one they really wanted. But I asked, how much shade do you have? And they said, it's very dense shade. And I said, don't do it. I mean, it'll be a green plant, but you won't get any flowers.
Yeah.
Well, about where we live here in Poway? Can that plant take full sun, or would it be better served with filtered light?
Filtered.
Okay. Yeah. Sort of eastern exposure, full sun in the morning. Morning sun, great. But sort of filtered light would be best. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always been one of my favorites. It's bulletproof. About the only thing that affects it is every once in a while we'll get an infestation of glassy winged sharpshooters on it. And it's funny, the only way I can tell that it's got the glassy winged sharpshooters on it is because it's right out by our back patio. And if we're having dinner outside in the evenings when the sun's going down, you can look over and see the plant, and you can see the juice squirting out.
Yes, the projectile effluent comes out of the glassy wing sharpshooter.
Those insects are the most difficult insect to photograph.
Mm-hmm. They jump.
They spin around a branch to the other side almost instantly. They're very shy.
Yeah, it's incredible how quickly
they can go from one side to the other. So before we wrap that up, what's the name of the plant, and does it have a common name?
It's Clayera japonica.
Are there such things as common names?
The reason I ask is I know we have customers and people listening, and my wife is one of them, that if we say a plant, she's going to look it up, and she's going to want to know a little bit more about it. And so she can tell me to buy one the next day.
Then
so,
I would say, look up Clayera japonica, Clayera japonica. Yeah. I
don't know of a common name.
We'll look that up on the break.
Yeah. But it's a
stunner,
neat plant,
though.
Yeah,
and you don't see them often at all.
No, it, like I said, it's something that used to be very common. It was something that we had all the time. Now we have to look for it and try to. And when we find it, we'll bring it in. But it's not nearly as available as it once was.
Another fragrant plant. Why am I on the subject of fragrant plants this morning? But I love them. Is crepe jasmine. Tabernum, Montana.
Incredibly fragrant.
And there were some of those at the Point Loma store.
We have them here often too. We have one on our front porch.
It's great. It's such a fragrant plant. Beautiful, very interesting leaves, and it's a Monrovia selection. So of course that means it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's about $90 for a 5 gallon. On the other hand, what else are you going to do with your money?
Well, I will tell you that plant
spend it on plants.
Well, it is very fragrant. It's gorgeous. It looks like a coffee plant. The leaves are very similar. However, it cannot take sun.
No.
Too much. Really? Yeah, we have it in a spot, and depending on the time of the year, it gets burnt quickly and dries incredibly quickly. Mm-hmm. No matter how much water we're putting on all the plants, that one needs a little extra care. Or we have to move it in the summer months when the sun is further north to protect it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it is spectacular.
Well, it's very similar to a gardenia, too.
It does. Very similar. Yeah. All three of those look very similar. Yeah.
At the Botanic Garden in the conservatory we had at Taberno, Montana, species from Caribbean, I believe it was. And that plant had fragrant flowers that were so amazing, but it was very difficult to grow. It had fungal issues all the time. Mm. So the leaves would be, look like they were torn up, being eaten, but it was really just fungal.
Oh, interesting.
And bacterial.
Right.
But that's a beautiful thing. And then another gorgeous one for shade, that same kind of genre, would be the Brunfelsia lactea, queen of the night. That there's a common name, I know.
Yeah. Well, and the other are the yesterday, today, and tomorrow is also in that. Yeah.
But the Brunfelsia lactea is a white flower, but extremely fragrant at night. Mm-hmm. The beautiful thing.
Well, that's interesting. That one I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with Passiflora, mm-hmm. which is the small flower yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Right. And then the big one, the big flower.
Oh, goodness. They used to call it Crimson Robe or something.
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember which variety it is. But the flowers were huge. They're about 3 inches across.
I wonder, Widener used to sell that one.
Yeah. But the plant never looked like. The plant was never that attractive. The flowers were amazing, but the plant was, the plant just really wasn't an attractive plant.
It goes to show you can't have it all.
No. And as nice as the Brunsfelsia passiflora was, it was a decent looking plant and a nice flower, but it was a smaller flower, but it just wasn't as spectacular as the big one. Now I'm gonna have to look that one up and find out what that is, because I cannot remember off the top of my head. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way.